Good morning. On today's programme, body cameras for supermarket workers in Britain and the battle over the dune shacks of Provincetown, Cape Cod. But first we go to Brazil, and this week that country's Supreme Court blocked efforts to strip indigenous people of their land rights in what was an historic victory for the original inhabitants of the South American country. Farmers and agribusinesses had attempted to prevent indigenous communities from claiming land that they did not physically occupy in 1988. And there were emotional scenes outside the court when a majority of judges ruled in favour of indigenous rights. From Brazil, Sam Cowie reports.
Wearing colourful feather headdresses, their bodies painted, members of Brazil's indigenous community danced to celebrate the Supreme Court's decision on Thursday. By 9-2, the court rejected the marco temporal, or time limit, thesis, which establishes a cut-off date for the country's indigenous groups to be living on land they claim is theirs. According to the last census taken in 2022, Brazil is home to around 1.7 million indigenous people out of a population of more than 200 million. According to the time limit thesis, only indigenous groups living on land they claim is theirs on the 5th of October 1988 would have the right to it. The 5th of October 1988 is when Brazil's current civil constitution took effect, after a 21-year US-backed military dictatorship from 1964 until 1985, when the transition to civilian rule began. Indigenous advocacy groups point out that many native groups were ran off their lands during the dictatorship, often to make way for highways and other infrastructure projects, with at least 8,000 indigenous people killed during the era of military rule, according to Brazil's National Truth Commission. Currently, there are some 300 outstanding indigenous land claims in Brazil, which are awaiting constitutional protections. Experts say that the vast majority of these land claims would be invalidated if the time limit thesis were to pass. In May, Brazil's lower house of Congress approved the bill. Farmers and ranchers overwhelmingly support the measure, saying it removes legal doubts over currently disputed lands. We cannot be vulnerable to an anthropological report by an indigenous agency official in order to suddenly transform a city into a new indigenous reserve, Fabio Garcia, a congressman with the União Brasil party, said in Brazil's lower house in May when the measure was put to vote. It passed with 283 votes in favour and 155 against. Indigenous groups gain constitutional protections to their lands via a lengthy process called demarcation, which establishes the territorial limits of indigenous lands and which are then signed into existence by the executive. Elected last year with support from indigenous groups, Brazil's president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has said he will demarcate as many indigenous lands as possible. In April, during the Free Land Camp, an annual gathering of indigenous peoples in the nation's capital, Brasilia, he signed off on 6, with more expected this year. This comes after 4 years of paralysis under the far-right former president Jair Bolsonaro, who famously declared that he would not demarcate even 1 centimetre of indigenous land. The former president was also a ferocious defender of the time limit thesis, defeated Thursday by the Supreme Court. Now, however, members of the country's powerful farming caucus in Congress are manoeuvring to challenge the court's decision. Shortly after the Supreme Court's decision on Thursday, Pedro Lampion, a federal lawmaker and leader of the Rural Caucus in Congress, announced in the lower house that rural lawmakers would fight back. If it is necessary to obstruct work in the lower house, if it is necessary to obstruct work in the Senate, if necessary, ultimately, we will guarantee the right of property and the rights of rural producers in Brazil, he said. On Friday, the Rural Caucus filed a proposed amendment to the Constitution to define the time limit thesis, setting the stage for another showdown with the Supreme Court. After the court voted to strike down the measure on Thursday, however, indigenous groups are confident that the court would strike down the measure again, even if it were voted on a second time. For World Report in Sao Paulo, I'm Sam Cowie.
To the United States next, and to Provincetown, Cape Cod. P-Town, as it's known, is situated close to white hills of sand on which 19 tiny shacks with no electricity or running water are constructed. The dune shacks are symbols of Cape Cod's bohemian past and have a rich literary and artistic heritage. And a tight-knit community of artists and locals and activists who love them are in a battle with the National Park Service, which plans to lease out the homes at market rate to make money to pay for the upkeep of the sand dunes. Alice Hutton reports.
Provincetown is a picturesque former fishing village perched on the windy tip of Cape Cod, Massachusetts, filled with multicoloured clapboard homes, pristine beaches and beautiful sunsets. It has lived many different lives. On the one hand, it was the first place that America's Pilgrim Fathers landed in 1620 when they were starting out in the New World. But on the other, it's known as Gay Disneyland, with the streets filled every summer with self-proclaimed screaming homosexuals, wearing very little, and attending a calendar of risque events from Gay Pilot Week, Women's Football Week, Bear Week, and Mr. New England Leather Weekend. P-Town, as it's known locally, has been a queer mecca for decades, with LGBT people drawn there from across the US since the early 1900s to take advantage of its remote location and uniquely liberal boarding houses, before becoming the country's oldest official gay resort in the 1970s, following an unusual vote by the tourist board. But hiding just 2 miles away from the town's hustle and bustle, the squawks of seagulls and the roar of the ocean, lie the remnants of the town's other former more bohemian life, from when it was a famous artist colony.
"It's primitive, not for the faint-hearted," said Salvatore Del Dio, a 95-year-old artist and Korean War veteran who first made Frenchie's shack in the dunes his part-time home when he was a teenager. He's been coming back for 77 years, even spending his honeymoon with his late wife there in 1953. The weather-beaten wooden home has no electricity, no indoor plumbing, and it's isolated, allowing for uninterrupted solitude and refuge during the spring and summer months, when he digs it out from storm-driven sands, replacing rotting walls with salvaged driftwood, and enlisting dozens of friends to help lift it out of the encroaching dunes by hand, inches at a time. It's one of 19 similar homes that have, over the last 100 years, inspired some of the nation's greatest artists and writers, including playwrights Eugene O'Neill and Tennessee Williams, painter Jackson Pollock, novelists Jack Kerouac and Norman Mailer, and poets E.E. Cummings and Mary Oliver. "It's a grand place to be alone and undisturbed," O'Neill once said of his hideaway there. But in the spring, their owner, the National Park Service, which has overseen the protected seashore where they rest since it became a federal reserve in the 1960s, sent out eviction notices and announced plans to lease 8 of the homes out at market rate to selected bidders beginning this autumn. They say the much-needed revenue will go towards the upkeep of the dunes, which they claim are being eroded through climate change, and the preservation of the crumbling homes, as well as allowing a fresh generation to enjoy them. But critics claim the dunes remain as they ever were, a silly place to build a house perhaps, and subject to an ancient cycle of erosion and shifting sands. In 2019, following a northeaster storm that washed away a massive amount of Ballston Beach in nearby Truro, revealing the clay underneath it, naturalists told the Provincetown Independent that erosion on beaches wasn't necessarily always bad. The sand wasn't gone, it was just offshore. Instead, the campaigners say this is a cover for a land grab. Housing is already in very short supply in the tiny town, which has less than 3,000 full-time residents, but 65,000 summer visitors. Rocketing house prices caused by holidaymakers mean even the smallest of homes can fetch upwards of $2 million, with hotels in peak summertime sometimes reaching $900 a night. In 2021, a 180-square-foot converted shed was put on the market for $500,000. Each summer, migrant workers from Eastern Europe and the Caribbean, who staff the bars, restaurants and hotels, pack themselves 3 to 5 to a room to save money. Some residents fear being excluded permanently from life in this unusual historic place forever. For now, the shack dwellers are planning to put up a fight. Facing an avalanche of criticism and press coverage, Senators Edward Markey and Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts rallied to Mr. Del Dio's defense, and he was offered a 2-year extension. He declined, citing the lack of similar protection offered to his neighbors. He has now been barred from entering. "To treat this intoxicating place like real estate, I can't stand the idea," he told the crowds of reporters who trekked out to see him. "I'm ashamed that the Park Service would try to capitalize on it, without realizing the point of the shacks was to get away from civilization, from capitalism. This is Alice Hutton for World Report.
Finally, we go to the UK, where the supermarket group Tesco is offering body cameras to its staff following a dramatic rise in incidents of workers in its stores being assaulted. Violence against staff across the entire retail trade in Britain has increased significantly in the last year, and the decision by Tesco to equip employees with a camera follows physical assaults rising by a third. As Russell Padmore reports from London, many incidents are linked to shoplifting or gangs of thieves stealing to order.
Tesco's chief executive, Ken Murphy, wants the law changed so that abuse or violence against retail workers is made a specific criminal offence. The company reports about 200 cases of assault a month, hence the offer for staff to wear a camera. Tesco, which also operates in Ireland, isn't alone in having its staff attacked. The retail workers' trade union, Usdaw, says shoplifting is the most common cause of assaults and theft rose 75% last year. The British Retail Consortium, an industry umbrella group, says violence against shop workers has doubled since before the COVID pandemic. A recent study by the Institute of Customer Service revealed 44% of frontline retail staff had experienced hostility from customers. It's not that long ago that workers in supermarkets were regarded as heroes in the front line of the coronavirus crisis, working long hours at personal risk. But now shop staff face a new danger from abusive and violent customers. The cost of living crisis and food price inflation has created a class of poorer people who are shoplifting. But organised gangs are also targeting shops and stealing items to order. Over the last 4 years, Tesco has spent £44 million, about €51 million, to increase security, installing protective screens and giving staff personal radios, as well as more cameras. The German retailer Aldi, which also operates in Ireland, wants its British checkout staff to search shoppers' bags for stolen items. Waitrose is offering free coffee to police officers, hoping their presence will deter criminals. And the cooperative group is employing undercover security guards. The price of meat and baby food has soared, so products like steak and infant formula are being fitted with security tags. Experts say the collapse in social cohesion means offenders are willing to inflict serious injury on retail staff while trying to buy age-restricted products, or they get angry because fewer staff are working. Retailers know that verbal abuse has a detrimental effect on the mental health of staff. The industry and government launched Shop Kind, a campaign urging customers to respect retail workers, but it's had little impact. The problem is not unique to the UK. Earlier this year, RG Data, which represents more than 4,000 grocery stores across Ireland, described the abuse of retail workers as out of control. The New Zealand supermarket chain Foodstuffs experiences almost 40 incidents a day. In California, the authorities are telling retail staff not to tackle thieves. They could be carrying a gun. The grocery chain Whole Foods closed the store in San Francisco, saying it couldn't ensure the safety of staff. Last year, the American discount chain Target blamed organized retail crime for a loss of $400 million. That's about €372 million. Here in the UK, it's claimed retailers and their staff don't bother reporting crimes to the police because nothing is done. Supermarkets like Sainsbury and the trade union Usdaw recently told the government that the growth in violence has come despite record spending by the trade to prevent crime. British retailers want tougher penalties for people found guilty of shoplifting or violence. They also want more police officers to deter crime in stores. But that opens another divisive political debate. Earlier this year, the Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said the government had fulfilled its target of recruiting 20,000 new police officers. But critics insisted the figures are misleading because thousands also left the service. The COVID pandemic disrupted society. The cost of living crisis has tempted poorer people to steal from shops, and organised gangs of thieves are prepared to assault staff. During the coronavirus crisis, when British shop workers were commended for their service, issuing them with body cameras to deter assaults would have been unthinkable. Perhaps in the future, historians will look back on this as a dark time for society, but hopefully they'll also recall how we eventually change things for the better. This is Russell Padmore for World Report in London.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.